All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcast. It is November the 6th, 2023. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. Hope it's great wherever you are at. I mean, it's really beautiful. Beautiful fall morning, crisp, cool morning, sunshine, no wind, really, really pretty. Got up this morning. I'm trying to sell a car. My dad has a car that he wants to, we need to look at selling it. It's a great car, 1988 GTA Trans Am. It's his baby. He's had it ever, I think he bought it for his 50th birthday. And so it is I guess it's 36 years old because he's 86. So, but the car, I mean, the car is beautiful. Taking beautiful care of the car. But the problem is that I can't continue to take care of it the way he has. I don't have a garage to keep it in, and I feel like it's sort of at the peak of its life, right? I feel like everything after this is just down, and it's a great car. I think it'd be great for somebody, so I told him I'd help him out, and so I got up this morning, went, took pictures of the car, reached out to a friend of mine in the program. One of the cool things about getting sober is all the wonderful people that you meet, right? And I have a great friend who's sober, many years sober, who has a car lot. He sells cars, and I reached out to him this morning. He's going to take a look at it, do some research. But, you know, whatever I can do, try to help out my dad. He loves that car. I love that car. I drove it, took it out on Saturday, went to a meeting. It's such a cool car. You know, you forget, or I haven't forgotten. I do remember, actually. But back in the day, it seemed like when you used to drive in cars, you could roll down the window, and the air would not blow inside of the car. I know this sounds kind of silly, and maybe no one has thought about this, but I think about it because I like to drive around with the windows down, right? But the freaking wind inside the car, my wife's like, my hair, right? Everybody's like, my hair. But I drove that GTA Trans Am on Saturday around the town, and I had all the windows down, and not a breeze in the car, just perfectly chill. And I wish I could keep it. I wish I could keep it, but the reality is I can't, I got enough cars. I don't want to pay for more insurance, and like I said, it'd be better suited for somebody else. But that's what I've been doing this morning. I thought I'd come by and try to do a podcast. Mondays really set the tone. I went to a meeting last night. Last night was obviously Sunday. Big football game last night. Congratulations to the Eagles. Some fun football. But I did go to a meeting. I did think about not going to a meeting because of the football game. But I did go, and it was a great meeting. You know, it's a promises meeting. A guy shared, I think he had 39 years of sobriety. And part of me was like, I don't believe this. Right? So cynical. But listening to him share, and it didn't take but about two sentences to realize that this guy had a lot of time. I can hear... I can hear sobriety in a person's voice and how they talk and the conversation and the words that they use. I hear sobriety. Mm-hmm. You know, I can hear when someone doesn't have sobriety, how they talk about things. So awesome. You know, my hat's off. Anybody with 39 years is freaking awesome. His sponsor, I think, has 36 years, which is awesome. So congratulations to those guys. And thank you. You know, you're a great example of how to do this. And but you know, the topic was interesting because you know, he was sharing, you know, he had lost someone recently in his life, and you know, just reflecting on back in the day, how what a lonely existence it is when you're in that disease, and the person that had passed away in his life, I think it had been a few days since they had last spoken. So his thought was that this person died alone, right? And that is one of the saddest things about this disease, is that that's how we die, alone. You know, I was a huge fan of Alice in Chains. I played Alice in Chains on this podcast. Lane Staley was a freaking absolute vocal hero of mine. And he died alone, you know, one of the biggest faces in rock and roll, biggest faces, at least in this country, when it came to that 80s metal music grunge era. And I think they said that when he died, They think he'd been dead for like 11 days, and that's just awful. Surprise, surprise, Pearl Jam. But yeah, man, lonely, lonely, lonely. It can't, you know, I think they said that he had been dead for 11 days before somebody had found him. And what a nightmare. That is my biggest nightmare is, you know, dying, right? And nobody knowing and just, you know, whatever it is we do. And it's an awful thought. That's why, you know, as far as my father goes, I check on my dad every day. You know, sometimes I call him a couple times. I mean, he's doing really well. But my fear of him passing away and sitting on a couch and nobody knowing for multiple days would be horrific. And so out of respect to him and his dignity, right? And it's all thought. It's all mental. Nothing changes. We all, train keeps on moving. But for me, I don't want my father to be lonely. But the whole point of the conversation last night was just, you know, loneliness. And I remember before I even got sober how lonely I was. You know, I was very social, had tons of friends. But in the end, I was alone because nobody drank like I did. I didn't want to share. And it's just a lonely existence. And it's just me and self and having conversations and thoughts and, you know, creating scenarios in my head. Just really insane kind of thinking. And it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. So one of the great gifts of getting sober is hopefully ending that loneliness. And it did, right? You are immediately inundated with people. That's one of the most amazing things about getting sober is just, it's like you're opening up the gates to the club that you were never allowed in. And the friends, I remember leaving my first meeting, and I've shared this, going to the grocery store and running into people I just saw at a meeting. And, you know, hey, you know, all of a sudden I had friends. All of a sudden I was no longer lonely. But the problem is that, and, you know, and I shared this last night, you know, when I got sober, it was really lonely. I mean, I'm sober today and it can be lonely. But what I shared in the meeting is hopefully through, you know, these steps, working with the sponsor, working with others, we don't have to be lonely, so to speak, right? Because, you know, as a person in my addiction, it's just a person, right? I don't even think it has to do with addiction. I relied on other people to validate me, right? I relied on other people. It's not that I was lonely. I was lonely from being validated or recognized or, you know, like I, you know, my whole drinking career really started because I wanted to be validated, you know, with my buddy Danny and him introducing us to alcohol. And I thought I was just having fun, but later on I would learn that I was afraid, right? I was afraid that if I didn't try alcohol that, you know, maybe my buddy Danny wouldn't like me, right? And that would be even more lonely. So it's really, for me, it was about being validated and recognized by other people. And, you know, I shared last night, I go, you know, if I work these steps to my best ability, right, which I have, I don't have to be lonely. I don't have to rely on other people to validate me. I don't need to be recognized. I don't need to be praised or whatever. it is that we get from being around people, because I'd prefer not to be around people. I am and this can be dangerous too. I'm really a loner. Really, you know, now that, and I, this is the other thing is that I, you know, one of the tough things about getting sober was, you know, you sort of pull back the curtain on humanity. You can kind of, you know, you just sort of see how I have been, can be, was at one point, hopefully ain't or isn't, what's the word? Hopefully I am not that way anymore, right? But when you've got a big dose of these steps and you've worked a program, you recognize how not only am I a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility, but just about everybody else is too. And, you know, there's nothing worse than, you know, someone being like, hey, man, you know, you should try this, these 12 steps, right? You know, you're self-centered, man. We don't always recognize that. I even have trouble recognizing it, right? I mean, it's clear now, but I definitely, before I got sober, had no idea that was my issue. I thought I just partied too much. And so it's a, you know, you learn how to keep your mouth shut, right? You learn how it's almost worse, right? Not only am I not relying on people to validate me anymore, but I really don't have anything to say because I'm not sure what I would say would be helpful. And, you know, so it can be even lonelier. And I, you know, that's what I shared last night, man. It, just because I got sober doesn't mean that I'm now surrounded by tons of people. One thing is I realized when I was surrounded by tons of people, it was for a whole different reasons, right? I sometimes confuse hanging out with people with being social. And usually when I was hanging out with people, it's because I wanted to get something or we wanted to get something as a team, right? Or as a group, we had a goal. And then once we got it, we would use it together. And that was what I would call friendships, right? These are my people, right? No, just like-minded idiots is what we were. And, but when you get rid of all the like-minded idiots, it can be kind of lonely. And then you get into a program like the one I'm in, and you start to learn about these things and these character defects and why we do certain things and why we manipulate, and then we're like, shit, and then we can't do that, and then we're just left kind of alone, right, at peace. And then, you know, for me, I start isolating. And I'm not a, what I've learned is I'm not a extrovert. I am introverted. I re-energize through alone time. Extroverts, I think they re-energize through people, right? I need to be with people. I need to get my energy up. I need to, you know, some people are like that. I prefer to not be, I don't re-energize through people. I re-energize through a little quiet time. But I have to be careful because then I can start to isolate. And I do love a good isolation. And my wife is the same way. I mean, we love to pull down the curtains, grab some blankets, jump on the couch, and just kind of huddle up. And, you know, it's good, but we can't do that all the time. And sometimes I'm like, I got to get up, right? We sort of did that yesterday. There wasn't a lot going on. I did work in the morning, but after that, it wasn't much going on and just sort of laid around. And at one point, I'm like, I got to get up, right? The day is nice. I got to get up. Went to the gym. Oh, my God. I did some exercises, and I can't even lift my arms today. Do that again, that's for sure. But, you know, I have to be careful. You know, I don't want to become isolating. I don't want to isolate from others. And, I remember, you know, I shared this last night. I'll never forget when I first got sober. I got sober March 31st, 1997. And it was a whirlwind, right? My whole life, that was my first attempt at really getting sober. I had tried to get sober when I was in Camp West Fork in the Big Bear Mountain probation camp. It's not that I tried. I had no choice. There was nothing to use. So I was sober, but I was trying to talk about being sober. I remember having a conversation with the guys that would come up and share the meeting. And I'd say, you know, I've had it. I want to be sober. And so I can't say that was my first try because I really had no choice. Because after I got out, I really got high the next day. So that really didn't have any effect. So March 31st, 1997 was the first time that I really, really made an effort. I really put down some time. I mean, like, you know, my first year of sobriety was absolutely 1 year, no drugs, no alcohol, all program, probably my first couple years. And then, you know, I had had that back injury and I was, I don't know, I might have been doing, I may have been doing pain pills in my first year, but I don't think I was abusing them. Because I legitimately had pulled my back in 1999, just destroyed it. So, but 1997, sober, no pain pills, right? 1998, sober, no pain pills. And then 1999 is when I hurt my back and then the pain pills would show up. And that struggle between trying to stay sober and abusing pain pills would start. But that was the beginning, right? But I remember that first year, 1997, and the Christmas season came up, and I remember hanging out with people. We had a small group of maybe 6 to 10 people that sort of hung out after meetings and stuff, and I remember they had a big Christmas party for a sober Christmas party at the fire hall, and it was so freaking boring. I thought, I can't do this. This is awful. And I remember doing the Macarena. I wasn't even a dancer. I definitely didn't listen to Macarena. But at that point, I was dancing, doing the Macarena, sober. And I was thinking, God, take me away. Right? This is fucking terrible. But I hung on, right? Kept hanging on. And it did get better. But all of the, what I would define as lonely, what I would define as friends, what I would define as relationships, what I would define as hanging out, you know, once I got sober, all those things changed, you know, all those things changed. I'd always considered myself, what my mom used to say, you got so many friends. I had so many people that I had in my life that helped me get the things that I wanted. But to actually, you know, I look at my life today, I have from that sort of that period in my time to right now, I have one friend, my buddy John, that I talked to. Him and I grew up together. We were kids together. His parents blamed me for everything. My parents blamed him for everything, right? We were that scapegoat kid. But, you know, today we're still friends. But that everybody else that I thought was a friend really was just either a partner in crime or just a step on a ladder trying to get somewhere or get something that would, you know, appease my addiction. And when I got sober, all of those people dropped away. Right. And so what I thought was a bunch of friends, I really didn't have. Relationships that I thought were true friendship, blood relationships, were really just associates. And I really learned that I didn't know how to be a friend to people. I really didn't know how to be accountable to a relationship and a friendship. I really didn't know how to have an honest conversation about something other than drinking and drugging and partying, right? And it was weird. And so it made me feel even more lonely. And, you know, but I just kept coming, man. I waited out, you know. I said I'd rather be a little bit lonely than drunk. I'd rather be redefining what friendship is. I'd rather be redefining what it is to have a relationship with another person other than being drunk. And so I've been working on it. And I still, you know, I have friends today. But every person that I'm friends with is either usually a client or somebody in this program. And, you know, and it's sort of the same thing, right? We use people in the program to help us stay sober, right? People help people, right? We just, you know, I guess if you watch TV and you watch commercials and they, especially the beer commercials, it looks like a lot of people have a lot of great friendships. But I never had one of those, right? We never had that capture that moment where we're all just like smiling and gleaming and glistening and drinking beers and everything was great. We maybe would have had that. I think about going to Elephant Butte Lake in New Mexico one summer, and we might have had that, but it would later turn into fighting, you know, drunken debauchery. It never was that moment that looked like these people are all amazing friends. And but, you know, what I've learned is that over time, working these steps, it does redefine what friendship is and the role that certain things that go on in our life are really what they are. And I think That just the aspect of me using people to get what I want and calling them friends, you know, is a character defect is what it is. And I think as we go through these steps, especially 4, 5, 6, and 7, I think we learn a lot about ourselves. And it's pretty awesome, right? Sometimes it's good stuff, right? Sometimes it's bad. But we know, at least we know what we're working with. And, you know, a character defect of mine is that I use people to get what I want. You know? All my friends, we were like a team. Hey, you got this? Nope, you got this? Let me make some phone calls. You got this? You got the money? We got the money? We got things? You know, it was a whole thing. These are my best friends. My best friend. You know, my best friend, Jeff, he lives out in, I think he's out in Arizona now. Him and I were he was a great friend. He was one of my best friends. And we had a lot of cool stuff that didn't involve drugs and alcohol. But 90% of our friendship was based on, you know, we met in high school. We both played guitar. We both liked smoking pot. We both loved Metallica. He had a van. And we loved the adventure of finding weed, right? And so we would find weed, smoke weed in the van, right? And laugh and have a ball, and that was our friendship, right? And what I've really learned is, you know, my phone doesn't ring. Like, my buddy Jeff has not called me. That's another thing I wonder about, because I am the guy that reaches out. You know, I call my buddy John all the time. He never calls me, which is fine. But then I'm like, should I care, right? Has John got it figured out? Does John not give a shit? And that's how we're supposed to be. The fact that I still want to reach out and give John a call and still continue to be friends and have some dialogue between us, is that just me doing something? Like, should I be over that? Should I not care? I sort of kind of gotten that way because I am the guy that always calls and he never calls me. So then I'm like, well, fuck it. I'm not going to call him anymore. And that's probably not good either, right? Devil talk. I was texting him the other day and I said, I'll give you a call sometime this week and we can catch up. He said, sounds good. I haven't called. But I have several friends. My buddy Jeff. Jeff's never called me out of the blue. Billing, hey, Jeff, what's going on? Jeff's fine without having a relationship with Tom. And I've made calls to him over the years. But not much is going on. So, you know, one of the character defects or one of the things that I needed to recognize is that, you know, a lot of the friendships I had in the past were used for getting certain things. And they are not actually friends. They're just counterparts, right? They're just part of the team. And that's fine. So maybe I wasn't as, I don't even know the word. Maybe I wasn't as social as I used to think. But for today, you know, November 6, 2023, I don't find myself lonely at all, right? I have a family, I have my kids, and I have my job. And I was chatting with a buddy of mine last night, a buddy, right? He's not a friend. He's my friend, I think. But, you know, the other thing is that my job is so social, right? You know, I have clients, I cut hair. So I'm, you know, 8-10 people a day I'm having a conversation with. Sometimes I go home, I tell my wife, I just don't want to talk, right? Because I am not the great talker. I am not the guy that just wants to sit and chat and curl up and chat it out for an hour. I, you know, and sometimes I don't even hide it very well, which is really bad. I feel bad about that. But, you know, by the time my day's over, I'm just done. And I need to sit and not talk and re-energize myself. And, yeah. So, you know, coming into a program, getting sober can be very lonely. It's very lonely at the end of our drinking or drugging, right? We've lost everybody. Nobody wants to chat with us. Everybody's mad. We've got nobody. And then when we find sobriety, we're inundated with all these wonderful new people. And, you know, that is the cool thing about sober. And I do consider the people that I know in this program as a friend, right, for most of the part, because I do think we want to help each other. No conditions, you know, unconditionally. We'd like to help each other and we'll help each other. But, you know, just starting to understand why I needed friends in the first place. Why do I need people around me in the first place? Why do I need to be validated by other people? I don't. And working these steps has taught me that, and I feel a lot better about it. And then I can just pick and choose, right? Yeah. Let's see if I can do a reading. Are you lonely? I get it. Getting sober can be very lonely. I definitely agree to that. It is, you know, it's not like, you know, especially if we're social butterflies at bars, right? Hanging out at bars, hanging out with people. People find comfort in that. One of the first things that unfortunately goes when we get sober is that, right? Hanging out in bars and stuff. And so, but my suggestion or what I did, I just go to a lot of meetings, man. Go to a meeting every day. You know, get involved, get into service work, work with others, men's breakfast. You know, there's all sorts of things that people do. There's a men's breakfast on Saturday I'd love to go to. I have to work. But a bunch of newcomers, a bunch of, you know, whether it's, I don't know how much time they got. It varies, right? But there's a group of guys that meets every Saturday morning for breakfast. And I think that's, we used to do the same thing. We used to do men's breakfast at people's houses. And I used to host it at my house. And we'd make eggs and we'd hang out and have a meeting and, you know, just trying to hang in there. All right. Going with the flow. November 6th. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. 12 steps. Uh-oh. Nope. Nope. 12 steps and 12 traditions. The first words I speak when arising in the morning are, I arise, O God, to do thy will. This is the shortest prayer I know, and it is deeply ingrained in me. Prayer doesn't change God's attitude towards me. It changes my attitude towards God. As distinguished from prayer, meditation is a quiet time. Without words, to be centered is to be physically relaxed, emotionally calm, mentally focused, and spiritually aware. One way to keep the channel open and to improve our conscious contact with God is to maintain a grateful attitude. On the days when I am grateful, good things seem to happen in my life. The instant I start cursing things in my life, however, the flow of good stops. God did not interrupt the flow. My own negativity did. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I think that's sort of what I was saying last night and I'm trying to say today and figuring out today is that, you know, if I have to be centered is to be physically relaxed, emotionally calm, mentally focused, and spiritually aware. And I think if you have those four things, you start realizing the role people play in our lives and what role we play in that, right? So, you know, there's a lot to be learned through these steps besides the fact of not drinking, right? There is, you know, for me, the steps have helped me create a life that seems or that is so much better that I don't want to choose to drink today. And that is all I can ask for. Hope everyone's having a great day. I appreciate you letting me share and we'll talk another time later.